Welcome to this edition of My Car Guru, our special March Madness edition. Well, maybe the first part of it. I was reading an article in USA Today and made me think about March Madness and basketball. I was always a big basketball lover. Liked playing it more than watching it, but I did dig watching it. I remember in 1967, 68, my grandfather, who was an old country doctor up in West Virginia, took my brother and myself to a ball game at the Charleston Civic Center, and it was an exhibition game where the Boston Celtics were playing the Cincinnati Royals. So who was the superstar of the Cincinnati Royals? That's right, the Big O, Oscar Robertson. I wonder how many of you really got that right. They don't exist anymore. I wish there was a basketball team in Cincinnati. There's a football team there. Mr. Burroughs is going to make them great again. But what else? Oh, yeah, they were playing the Boston Celtics. So John Havlicek, Bill Russell, Don Nelson. Remember him? He used to do the underhand foul shot, kind of like Wilt Chamberlain. I think Don was really good at it, though. But that was an interesting game. I never forget the cussing that was going on in the field. My grandfather looked over at me. He said, "Lenny, you don't have to talk like that." Of course, I knew that if I talked like that, I was going to get a hand somewhere. But anyway, when it comes to NCAA, let's get on track here. They had some advice as to how to avoid making a mistake when you do your NCAA tournament bracket. And you know, a lot of these things mirror any type of team building thing. When you're thinking about, okay, which way am I going to go with this team? There's a lot of dealerships changing hands right now. Several dealerships in the Tri-Cities have sold out. The Gatton organization is the most prominent one right now. But what happens when a new dealer comes in? They have to make a decision. Get rid of everybody, bring in their own team, keep the existing team intact and see how they do, if they can make them perform better or keep performing as well as they have been, or just make some changes here and there. Now, I've seen all three scenarios happen. When I was actually buying different dealerships or with my partners, we typically tried to retain everybody and try to keep from running off anybody and just do it by attrition if we found somebody that wasn't performing well. But, you know, that's kind of what you have to think about when you are picking a bracket, picking teams to win in the NCAA. So here we go. Don't pick a team that hasn't been better than 500 in the past 10 games. I guess, in other words, the most recent performance of a team is sometimes indicative of their near future performance. Now, there's no doubt that some people can really get charged up because, no, we're in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, or in the case of a car dealership, we've got new owners. You know, I've got to prove myself, make them proud of me and not fire me. So that's good advice for picking a basketball team or a dealership team. What's number two here? Don't put too much stock in recent streaks. I guess that's because they tend to peter out, at least based on history. You know, the same thing is true. Right now, there's a lot of dealerships changing hands, and it's because of the amount of profitability there is. I know that seems kind of like it's impossible to have such short supplies of vehicles and have dealers doing extremely well from a profit standpoint, but that's the way it is right now, and so it looks good on the balance sheet and the income statement, but you know, are they going to be able to make it when things return to normal, if they ever do? So I guess the same thing applies to picking a team, a basketball team, that is. Number three, don't assume a team that did well last year or even historically will win this year. Unless John Wooden is the coach, which he's not living anymore, so that's unlikely. Yeah, he was the guy that won, I don't know, seven or eight championships in a row at UCLA. You remember that? His books are a great read for any type of young person getting into the business world or an old person who just wants to be entertained. How he did it, how he worked his magic. He was a wizard. They called him the Wizard of Westwood. I went to a basketball camp in 1971. It was the Shenandoah Sports Camp, and the guest coach at that camp was John Wooden. I've said this before, but the first thing he did with us is sat us all down and did exactly what he did with Sidney Wicks and Lew Alcindor, who became who? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And all those other superstars that came out of UCLA, like Bill Walton and so forth. First thing he has them do is, after they get dressed and come out on the basketball court, he makes them sit down on the bench and take their shoes off. And take the shoelaces out of their shoes. And pull their socks off, and then put them back on. He shows them how to put the socks back on. Then he shows them how to put the shoes on and then lace those shoes up. And his whole point is to teach you how to not create blisters on your feet. Now, back then, I got a lot of blisters because I was wearing those canvas Converse All-Stars, and they aren't quite as ergonomically correct as the shoes of today. So you ended up getting a lot of blisters if you didn't put your shoes and socks on right. So anyway, that was John Wooden's first thing, and he did that with us at the Shenandoah Sports Camp. I thought that was so weird at the time. And then I became an adult, and I appreciated the whole concept of starting with the very basics. We'll talk a little bit more about basics when I get back from this break. Let's talk about basics, fundamentals, you know, things that people need to be able to do before they go on to more complicated things. I see that a lot in business, in my business especially. When people, salespeople, service advisors, even technicians for that matter, they just don't know how to react with or how to interact with other human beings. They've never really been taught some basic fundamentals. Now, some of you may poo-poo this idea. I'm sorry. But, you know, just looking into somebody's eyes when you're talking to them, you know, direct eye contact, smiling at people, shaking hands, how to do that. Little things like opening doors for ladies. Of course, my mom didn't consider that a little thing, nor does my wife. Even table manners. Have you noticed how some people eat now? I mean, it looks like they're afraid somebody's going to take it from them. My mom used to teach manners, etiquette, that type of thing, for Eastman Chemical Company to their executives when they come from out of other countries. They didn't know how we eat. They didn't know how we shake hands and how we acknowledge other people. They come from different cultures. A lot of people would say, well, this stuff doesn't matter. It drives wedges between people. Is that true? I don't think it does. I think it unites people. It shows common decency and chivalry and allows us to interact in a better way, a higher way. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. A lot of dealerships focus so much on sales technique and how to get somebody to say yes. And sometimes they'll teach word tracks that really induce a lot of pressure on the part of the buyer. And they fail to hire the right people in the first place and give them the basic fundamental things that they need in order to be successful, just relating to other human beings. And, you know, you get at that information when you hire somebody, if you ask the right questions. And we work hard on that. We want to hire people that would be easy for us to like. You know, are they cordial? Are they polite? How do they handle their body language and so forth? Are they always looking down? Are they avoiding eye contact? Those kind of basic things are important. And if you don't have that, you don't need to be in the business of selling something to somebody. You need to be working in a field where, you know, you can work in a cubicle by yourself or work in a factory or something like that where you can get paid well to you know, manufacture something. You don't need to be in a position where, you know, you have to interact with other human beings a lot. I mean, people are different, right? And so hire the right people, put them in the right position. Now, that is hard right now. There is no doubt. It is difficult to find individuals who want to work, period, and then want to adapt, you know, because they just don't see it as important. They're harder and harder to find. There's no doubt about that. But we keep trying. And one of the things that we do is just try to ask the right questions when we're hiring somebody. I mean, if they can't answer these fundamental basic questions in a way that seems intelligent and they've been thinking about it, then you probably don't want them to work for you. Number one, how did you hear about the role that we're interested in hiring for? Did they come in because of an ad on Indeed.com, or did they hear it, you know, about it on Facebook or whatever? You want to find out what kind of research is this person doing to try to find a job? Is this something that just fell into their lap? Were they recommended by a friend? You know, were they sitting on the unemployment line and finally said, "Yeah, I got to stop this. I better get a real job." You know, I just don't know that I want to hire somebody that's unmotivated. Also, I really want to know what they know about our company. I mean, if they don't know anything about us, then why would they be interested in coming to work here unless they're just looking for a job? That's not a really good qualification, just looking. You know, what prompted them to apply for this job? Why are they here? I've actually had people show up in cutoffs and flip-flops for an interview before. We ran a job fair. We thought we would do that one time to see if we can get some qualified people because we were having zero luck at the time. So thought we might be able to coach people and help them find a position somewhere in our company. We stopped advertising for salespeople because there's just not many people that will apply for that job because they think it's too hard and it doesn't have the best reputation in the world. But you know, why did you apply? Well, I need to pay my bills. You know, that's just not a really good reason. It may be a good reason for them, but that's not a good reason for us to hire somebody. They need to be able to answer questions like, what do you think are your greatest strengths? You know, if a person can't answer that relatively quickly and come up with some pretty good ones, meaningful ones, things that most people would consider to be strengths, then they haven't thought about it. They haven't evaluated themselves enough. And also, you can ask people what their weaknesses are. That's tough. I mean, that's people are reluctant. I heard an answer one time that said, well, my greatest weakness is that I struggle finding people that are willing to work as hard as I do. If that's not a self-serving answer, I don't know what is. Do you have any questions for us? What do you want to know about this job or this company? No, you know, I just looking for a job and saw y'all had an ad. I don't really have any questions. Probably not the person you want to hire. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that very answer. Here's a good question. What is your definition of hard work? You know, some companies move at very different paces. You might be allowed a lot of time to finish projects and be left alone. Otherwise, you might have to work around a lot of other people, a lot of noise, and there might be a lot of expectations on you. And if somebody can't handle that, then they're going to burn out quickly. We had a guy that we hired as a salesperson. I mean, he passed most of the tests. We were settling a little bit. And you know, I told my nephew who hired him, I said, you probably needed to put a little bit more thought into that, just even after I just talked to the guy. But he didn't even make it through our grand opening. We hired him 3 days before our grand opening of the Nissan store. And right in the middle of the grand opening, one of the sales managers was looking for this guy, and they finally found his remnants. He had taken off his Gateway shirt and just draped it over his desk chair and just left. So this is what happens when you don't vet people properly and ask the right questions. Very fundamental basic skills that we're looking for. And there are also very basic fundamental questions you have to ask in order to find those people out. Here's a good question. Why are you leaving your current job? Now, a lot of people may have been on unemployment for a long time. My question would be, why did you stay on unemployment for so long? Did you just not want to work, or you couldn't find the right role for your skill set? What's the reason? They've got to be able to come up with a good answer, or they're not going to get hired by us. In 5 minutes, could you explain something to me that is complicated that you know how to do very well? Now, what if they can't answer that question? at all. I mean, that's a toughie. That would be one that I'd even have to think about. But, you know, there are things that I can do well that other people may struggle with. You know, for example, if somebody's never played a musical instrument, that's going to be, that could be their difficult thing that they're able to do well. So, you know, it could be some technical thing, or it could be something like doing a radio show, for example. Some people say, how do you do that? Say, I don't have a clue. I just have a lot of tolerant people that are willing to listen. Oh, and I really like this question. Who is the smartest person you know, and why do you say that? I've asked that question a few times to people, and it's amazing how many times they say, my mother or my father, and then they explain why. You know, sometimes they'll say a teacher. Very rarely will they say the name of a peer. And, you know, it's important to understand why they think they're smart. And it helps define smart for them. You know, it's the basically their measuring stick. I think that's very interesting. And you also have to get at what motivates people. Good question. What made you excited to get up and come to work at your last job? It is true that most people, or many people, dislike their jobs. For the companies that want to have the best culture and employer-employee relations, it's important that people are emotionally invested in coming to work. They have to feel like they're a part of a team. You know, if somebody said, well, I really enjoyed working with my teammates, or I really always got more motivated when I had something that I was really, that was really important to the company that I was trying to accomplish. I mean, those are the kind of answers that you want to get. You know, are they going to be able to find that same excitement in your company? You know, we have a hard time with salespeople because there's a lot of folks that get into this business and they're not used to the downtime. And when you're selling vehicles, there are periods of time where there's just nothing to do. I mean, you're caught up on your phone calls and the lot is empty. And so what we like to do is give people a list of things to choose from. And so, you know, you can go out and just inspect used cars to make sure that you don't see any flaws and that they're ready to be sold. Make sure that the stickers are where they're supposed to be, and that, you know, we can get fined, for example, if we don't have our FTC labels in every used car. If they're not in there before we show a car to somebody, it's $15,000 per occurrence. So that's an important thing to check. So just encouraging your people to get out and find something productive to do instead of just standing there and drinking Coke and smoking cigarettes. Well, let's take our last break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. I'd be willing to bet that if I ask any of you who you would name as the athlete, the professional athlete that has the strongest work ethic, that you would pick, that the majority of you would pick one of two people, Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. And why would you say that? Well, the reason I say it is because of the behavior that has been demonstrated both on the field and off the field. It's what they say, and it's what they do. And it's also the excellence that they have been able to achieve, both of them. You know, of course, Peyton was my guy. I mean, I met him first on the practice field at UT with my daughter Audra. We went to see UT practice. At the time, I was providing the coaching staff with a couple vehicles, and for that, I got access to you know, watch practices and fly with the team to a one away game a year, and got seats in the stadium and so forth. But we were walking back towards the back, and Peyton was back there throwing football with David Cutcliffe's son, who was looked like he was, as I recall, about 7-8 years old. And I was with Pat Washington, who was giving us the tour around there and introducing us to different people. And Pat was the quarterback for Auburn when Bo Jackson was there. And he was the very successful wide receivers coach. And matter of fact, he's still in the league. I think he's in the SEC. But Pat was just kind of taking us around. And he called Peyton over, and Peyton came running over, and he introduced us. And I've got a picture of him looking at me, squinting into the sun, and little Audra just from the back just holding up a piece of paper for him to autograph. But, you know, he's back there practicing. He's the last guy to leave, the first one to get there. And you know, there's no surprise that both he and Eli are very successful. And also why, you know, so many different colleges are after his nephew. Because they come from people who work hard and who have had great success. And so, and Tom Brady, you know, coming back out of retirement, it's just, it's not surprising. When people are used to competing at such a high level like that, it is so hard for them to give it up. And I'm not saying that based on my experience. I'm saying that based on what I've seen and the elite professional athletes that I have known over the years that have said the same thing. I mean, it's just hard to hang up the cleats. And, you know, there, and to find some way to direct that tremendous amount of energy and work ethic that they have into something else. When they can transition well, then they end up doing well and go on to great things like Peyton has done, and I'm sure like Tom Brady will do. But that's what you want to see. You want to have some Tom Brady's and Peyton Manning's in your organization, and we want to turn as many young people into those types of people as well. And the only thing that does that is consistent teaching, motivation, direction, and participating in their development. I mean, that's all of our roles as parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, coaches, teachers. You know, the greatest thing that we can do, I think, is to have a positive influence on somebody else, to give something good. And that's a great mission and as basic as it gets. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.